Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility presents Vermont Conversations with David Goodman, exploring ideas with innovators, change makers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is underwritten in part by the University of Vermont Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. By the Alchemist Brewery, serving the greater Waterbury community and Vermont since 2003. By Fairpoint Communications, small businesses make it big with Fairpoint. By Let's Grow Kids, focusing on the first years of child development. By Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers to promote clean, reliable, and cost-effective power. And by National Life Insurance, for more than 150 years working for a better tomorrow, as well as over 750 VBSR members. Here's David Goodman.
Welcome to this week's Vermont Conversation. Our topic this week is the new face of cancer care in Vermont. Cancer is the leading cause of death in Vermont. Each year, approximately 3,600 Vermonters are diagnosed with cancer, and more than 38,000 Vermonters are living with a current or previous cancer diagnosis. Well, here to talk about the many faces of cancer care in Vermont, later in the show, we'll be speaking with some survivors and people who offer support services. But in our first half hour, we're joined by two people. David Cranmore is a coordinator with Vermonters Taking Action Against Cancer, or VTAC. He is also a three-time cancer survivor. And Dr. Jim Wallace is the medical director of radiation oncology at UVM Medical Center in Burlington. David Cranmore and Dr. Wallace, thanks for joining us this week on the Vermont Conversation.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, David Cranmore, let's start with you. If you could just give an overview, a picture of cancer in Vermont.
That's a broad question, but cancer in Vermont includes all the basic cancers. But when we're looking at cancers and cancer survivorship, we look at the person from the day they're diagnosed as being a cancer survivor through the rest of their life. And so VTAC, our cancer coalition, has really been created to work on improving the quality of life of people living with cancer, which is a pretty broad mandate. But we work closely with the Department of Health, and the Department of Health has created a five-year state cancer plan. And that plan addresses activities and strategies that cover everything from prevention, the obvious smoking, stop smoking, and to detection, screening, treatment options, of which Dr. Wallace can talk about, and then we address the quality of life piece of quality of life for people living with cancer after treatment. And the final part is end of life and having providers find appropriate end of life care when that arises. Cancer in Vermont, statistically, the rates of cancer are statistically the same overall with the United States. We don't have necessarily a lot more or a lot less. We do seem to have a higher incidence of melanoma diagnosis in the state, but again, nothing too out of whack. And we also take a look at each county in the state, and our counties are all pretty much also equally even as far as number of diagnoses, number of deaths, number of screenings. So we're trying to keep a big picture look at things happening in the state and then try to support those activities more locally, and I think you'll be talking to some local folks later, support those activities that help too.
So, David, as I mentioned in the intro, you are a three-time cancer survivor. Talk a little bit about your own experience with cancer that's led you to become an activist on this issue.
So, I was diagnosed with leukemia in October of 99 and had a bone marrow transplant in 2000. And it was a long, slow recovery from that piece, but somehow going through that experience and getting back, I would say a couple years later, I kind of realized that this is a second opportunity for me to do something. So it's become more of an advocate for cancer patients, something that was kind of missing in my own cancer journey, and kind of like, well, what can I do to make a difference? And so I started volunteering. I was a volunteer at the Cancer Center in Burlington and got involved in actually writing the state cancer plan. So that got me involved. A secondary diagnosis of thyroid cancer kind of reminded me that the cancer journey isn't over. There are bumps and along the way, but that was treated successfully. And I just started treatment for a recent diagnosis of myeloma. And again, these could be all related in a long-term scope. There aren't too many 15-year bone marrow transplant survivors around, so sometimes I feel like I'm cutting edge, but it's just, once again, another reminder that cancer is there. It doesn't go away, and I just need to remain vigilant.
So you mentioned that your cancer journey, when it began in 1999, was a lot different and perhaps not as supportive as it might have been. Compare what it was like then to, you know, what patients have available to them now.
Well, much like cancer treatment and cancer, research, things just happen quickly. But 15 years ago, you were, kind of processed, and there were very few support groups. If you didn't have breast cancer, there's pretty much no support groups for people living with cancer. I went to Dana-Farber for my transplant. And as all transplant patients, you have a good team, a solid team of nurses and social workers and doctors helping you out. But then, when I was done and came back to Vermont, I didn't have that team anymore. And so that challenged me to a certain degree, and sort of the desire to be able to talk to somebody else who's actually been there. And so things would happen differently. Of course, back then on the internet, if you typed in a search for leukemia, you just got all sorts of horrible stuff. And now there are very good websites. Cancer.net is an excellent website for folks to go and get information about their cancer, about what to do, what to expect. So we have that. We do, although in Vermont we don't necessarily have more cancer support groups, but a group of survivors started something called the Vermont Cancer Survivor Network, which is developing a peer connection program called Kindred Connections, where people who are like me, a cancer survivor, get connected with a newly diagnosed patient and kind of talk to them, and you have the opportunity to talk to somebody that's been there. So it's a very volunteer-driven program, but we have that also. Then there are programs in the different hospitals that will address financial concerns. I was fortunate I had good insurance, but I know a lot of people don't. And, of course, a lot of times cancer, again, I'm saying, doesn't discriminate, Somebody's lost their job and, lost their home or whatever, and they get cancer. It doesn't matter. And so there are people at now our cancer centers that are just dedicated to helping patients find the insurance, find the way, find an emergency fund. There's just a fundraiser this weekend that in Montpelier to support the patient emergency support fund at the Central Vermont Hospital. So those are happening now. There's just a lot more available. And then organizations like American Cancer Society, American Lung Association, Leukemia and Lymphoma Society all have developed great websites to help people with specific diseases. So there's a lot more information. When I was diagnosed last time, I have a great big pile of research papers that I could go and look at to look at the different treatment options and then go talk to my doctor and talk about those options. So that was something that didn't happen. They told you what they were going to do to you 15 years ago.
Okay, well, let's
be part of the team.
And let's turn to one of those doctors, Dr. Jim Wallace. You're a radiation oncologist at UVM Medical Center. Thanks for joining us here on the Vermont Conversation.
Sure, my pleasure.
So UVM is the site of a number of clinical trials that's going on. And talk a little bit about what kind of research is going on at UVM around cancer.
So I would say that at UVM, we really have research going from very, very early
bench in the laboratory kind of research, trying to evaluate why cancers grow, why cancers spread, what can we do to intervene and try to prevent those things from happening, all the way up through taking part in these huge international cooperative group trials where we are taking standard of care and comparing it to something that might be better than the standard of care, and usually within the context of studies that involve thousands of patients within this country and others. And our input into those is obviously quite variable. The basic science research is outstanding. We do very, very well. There's really interesting stuff happening here. And then our clinical research is something that we're working on. We certainly try to offer every patient we see the opportunity to take part in a clinical trial. We're really trying to make that part of the culture is for patients who are new to us to understand that frequently taking part in a clinical trial is the best possible therapy for them at that time.
What are some of the newer treatment options available here that you're most excited about, that you think are the most promising?
Well, I think the thing that everybody is really interested in and not exactly sure how it's going to pan out is understanding the actual genetic makeup of these cancers. So we can, and we frequently will send tissue samples or biopsies off to a specialty laboratory, and they will tell us if it has one of a number of different gene mutations, and those mutations sometimes are interesting for us and they drive us to think differently about that tumor. But every once in a while there's a specific genetic mutation that we can take an action against, typically with a new drug that's developed specifically to take an action against that genetic mutation. So the gene mutations might be related to the way that a cancer cell absorbs a chemotherapy drug, and if we can allow it to more easily get the drug in or prevent it from getting the drug out, then that drug might be more lethal to the cancer cell. Obviously, from a radiation perspective, we're pretty interested in identifying cancers that might respond to radiation therapy, and there probably are some that might not. So historically, we have looked at a biopsy under the microscope and say, well, that's a, say, bladder cancer. And we say, well, 70% of bladder cancers respond beautifully to radiation therapy, but we've never really been able to figure out, well, what happens to the other 30%? How come they don't? And it probably is hiding in the genome. It's probably hiding in the genes, and we're going to find an answer. So we'll know, well, those 30% of people, we're going to have to try something else other than radiation therapy because it's probably not going to work.
So these are the so-called targeted therapies that we hear a lot about in the news. Can you give an example of types of cancer where targeted therapies have shown some success?
Sure. So the one that I think most commonly gets used is a specific type of lung cancer, adenocarcinomas of the lung, which in my training now a couple decades ago, we had a general understanding of what it looked like under the microscope, and we gave it chemotherapy and radiation therapy, and sometimes they'd respond and sometimes they wouldn't. But now looking specifically again for these various alterations in their genetic makeup, we will know, for example, that one type of chemotherapy might not work at all, or a very specific drug specifically designed for a drug that has that mutation, maybe we should start with that right away and avoid radiation and avoid chemotherapy and hopefully do so with fewer side effects and a better response. So it's really changed the environment. For example, frequently, unfortunately, in my field, we see people who've had tumors, say, starts in the lung that spreads to their brain metastases, which have, we always know, is a bad thing. As I frequently tell patients, you don't have to be a doctor to know if the tumor spreads to your brain, it's bad news. And we need to think of it very, very seriously. But even people in that very, very serious circumstance, we see people now not uncommonly living for years or longer where that just wasn't possible before we understood the biology of the disease and how to involve ourselves in that biology and potentially try to control it better.
Can you talk about what kind of treatments are people, you know, we heard David Cranmer talk about having to go to Dana-Farber in Boston for a treatment 15 years ago. Are there treatments that are most treatments now available in Vermont, and do they require, you know, coming to a place like Burlington, or are they available in some of the smaller hospitals around the state?
So that's all part of this whole community of cancer care, I think, that Dave was talking about a little bit, and we've talked about some, is we know the vast majority of people want to and should be cared for as close to home as they possibly can be. It's where their support is. It's easier to drive every day if you need to drive for 8 weeks to get radiation treatment to do so as close to home as you possibly can. That being said, to be responsible with resources, there are some things that might be better done at a facility where, using radiation oncology as an example, we have six doctors and five medical physicists and staff and support and infrastructure to do some specialized things. Frankly, there aren't that many special things we do in Burlington that we don't do or are done elsewhere in the radiation community in Vermont. There are some things that we do send to very specialized facilities that we simply can't do here because we just don't have the volume of patients to say we should go buy a $100 million piece of equipment that has very, very limited use. The classic example is a machine that makes protons, a type of radiation. There's one in Boston, beautiful treatment for children with most cancers, but we just will never have enough of those people, thankfully, to support having one of those in Burlington or anywhere else in the region.
Dr. Jim Wallace, I understand that your dad was an oncologist in Rutland and one of the pioneers of chemotherapy in Vermont. So you have a longer view than most of how cancer treatment in the state has evolved. What was life like for your dad when he was a practicing oncologist, and what was available to him and not available to him, or how would you describe that journey?
Interesting question. So he was actually the first medical oncologist in the state, and that was here in Burlington back in 1963. There were not medical oncologists, and ironically enough, he actually got a lymphoma as the only oncologist here in Burlington, and somehow found a way to direct his own care and was cured of that lymphoma. So it was a very different era in the early 1960s than now. The understanding of malignancy, the understanding of how to treat it, and the use of these medications and other sophisticated treatments and surgery just were not very well understood, despite incredibly dedicated people. That was back in the era where, you know, there were still people doing lots of house calls. I remember doing house calls with my father. So it has come a long way since then.
What led you to decide to become an oncologist? I think for a lot of people, they think, boy, spending all your work hours focused on cancer, that must be kind of depressing. What would you say to that?
I think people do self-select to come into this field. People, for one reason or another, find the good in it. I certainly am incredibly fulfilled when I treat somebody knowing that I'm not going to cure them, but make their pain more easily controlled, or sometimes just get them to smile, realizing we're going to get through today and hopefully tomorrow will be a better day. It really depends on the personality. I think we can probably tell from the first year of medical school who's going to end up heading towards a field like this. So everybody chooses this field for different reasons. For me, it was pretty much what we talked about before, my interactions with my father, and more importantly, actually, my interactions with him during his malignancy when I was 6 and 7, just to me made cancer not a very scary disease, just made a disease that needs to get treated and needs dedicated people to be part of that team, and I wanted to be part of that team from literally as long as I can remember.
So you work on the radiation side primarily. Where is radiation? How is the balance swung back and forth between chemotherapy and radiation treatment?
So it depends a lot on disease site. The revolution, really, in radiation oncology in my field was probably now 25 or 30 years ago, related to a number of diseases. The classic most common disease was breast cancer, where up until 30 years ago, most women were having their breasts removed in a radical or modified radical mastectomy. Now the vast majority of women don't have to have their breasts removed and are treated with radiation therapy. In that era, people who had tumors of their arms or legs, sarcomas of their arms or legs, had amputations. Roughly 20, 30 years ago, research was completed that showed that people probably don't need that. They can have a smaller surgery and have radiation therapy. 20 and 30 years ago, people routinely had their larynx removed, their voice box removed if they had cancer of the larynx. That almost never happens now, or happens with rare exception, because radiation therapy has been proven to be just as effective, and they get to keep their ability to speak. So really the revolution for us, and the reason that really brought radiation oncology into the mainstream, was our ability to preserve the organ or structure in ways that surgery couldn't do it. With respect to our relationship with chemotherapy, we've just become a lot better at supporting people through therapy. We know many chemotherapy drugs work with radiation in a very synergistic way. It makes both of our therapies more effective, but they make people sicker. So we've had to learn how to take care of sicker people, and we're doing that too.
Let's turn back to David Cranmore, the coordinator for Vermonters Taking Action Against Cancer. David, talk a little bit about how end-of-life care and palliative care has changed in Vermont.
Okay, well, in Vermont, we look at these as two separate things. Palliative care is meant to be an easing of symptoms, management of symptoms. And we think a lot of times more of in pain control. And so palliative care is now slowly being integrated more into the more day-to-day oncology service. So obviously some of the stuff they're going to do to you is going to hurt. And what we want to do, we're talking about that quality of life issue, but being in, you know, working in teams like Dr. Wallace's team, work with their palliative care team to get that patient the kind of support they need, medical and otherwise, so that they can control that pain and sort of make it a little easier. I would think, and Dr. Wallace may know better, but I think sometimes patients stop treatment because it hurts too much, and that just defeats the purpose. So in palliative care, and not every hospital that has a palliative care doctor, but our cancer centers all do have palliative care nurses that can help help patients on that piece. End-of-life care is also very important, and despite all the political debates or whatever, but as Dr. Wallace said, sometimes we can't cure that person's cancer. What we can do is make their remaining days or months or whatever it might be as quality as possible. But there are things we need to have, things like advanced directives, so that your family knows what your wishes are when you reach that end of treatment stage. And so Vermont is doing very well in having advanced directives. We are supported. I know I get harassed every time I see my doctor about making sure I have an advanced directive on file, having nothing to do with my cancer, just as a general peace. So I think we're doing a good job of having that in place. And then hospice care, Vermont ranks very high in the quality of hospice care that's delivered, especially when we're a smaller state. But hospice care is definitely, it's a piece of every cancer center's standards, and they really reach it. We have some really great doctors. Talk about that is to me the tough job in oncology, but these people are just so dedicated to helping those people and their family through their final weeks and days of life. It's just a terrific piece. We just want to make sure when we're counseling cancer survivors, make sure that they're aware of, you know, having an advanced directive and having that discussion.
David, what as somebody who's now going through cancer treatment for the third time, what helps you most to keep your spirits up?
I have an unstoppable positive mental attitude. Every day I get up, I have a goal that every day I want to help at least one other cancer patient that day. It doesn't matter how crappy I'm feeling, I'm going to go out and do what I can to do that. Dr. Wallace sees me roaming the halls of the cancer center and on my mission. And so I think that keeps me going. Two wonderful grandchildren also don't hurt as far as helping that positive attitude. I want to watch them grow up. But I go in and I have, you know, I engage the team that's working with me. I engage fellow patients that are getting their treatment with me. And I leave and I'm going, I don't even think of it as like, I'm getting treatment. It's like I'm helping people.
Okay. Well, David Cranmore, the coordinator with the Vermonters Taking Action Against Cancer, and Dr. Jim Wallace, a medical radiation oncologist at UVM, thanks to both of you for joining us this week on the Vermont Conversation.
My pleasure.
Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is pleased to provide David Goodman's Vermont Conversations with underwriting from National Life Insurance, Fairpoint Communications, by Let's Grow Kids, The Alchemist Brewery, the University of Vermont Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, and Green Mountain Power, as well as over 750 VBSR members.
Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. This week, our topic, we're continuing to talk about the new face of cancer care in Vermont. And in this half hour, we're going to look at some of the support services that are available to people with cancer. And here to talk about that with us, we have Beth Rusnak, who's president of the National Life Foundation, Teresa Lever, who's the patient navigator for the cancer program at the University of Vermont Health Network, Central Vermont Medical Center. And joining Teresa is Amy, who has been a patient at Central Vermont Medical Center, and she'll talk a little bit about some of her experience. But I want to start by talking with Beth Rusnak. Beth, the National Life Group held the Do Good Festival this last weekend, and supporting cancer care was a big part of that. So tell us a little bit about the Do Good Festival and what it supports.
Sure, I'd be happy to. This is our second annual Do Good Fest, and it's held right here on our campus in Montpelier. And it's an opportunity for us to welcome the community, our neighbors, up to our campus. It's a beautiful setting. And the reason it's called the Do Good Fest is because we realize that we have an opportunity, and honestly, we think an obligation, to give back to the community that supports us. So what we do here is we invite some great musicians who are fantastic on Saturday, as well as nonprofit organizations, to talk about the good they do in their communities. One such organization that we support heavily and have had a longstanding relationship with is Branches of Hope through the Central Vermont Medical Center. And we decided, because of that strong partnership and relationship, that we would like to raise money to help their patient fund that's administered by Branches of Hope. So all proceeds from parking, it's a free concert, but all proceeds from parking went directly to Branches of Hope. And this year we're really proud to say that we were able to raise $15,000 for the Cancer Patient Fund.
And what is, as the National Life Foundation looks at things to support, why is cancer care, why did that one rise to the top?
That's a great question. There are many reasons. First of all, sadly, cancer is still very prevalent. I think all of us know someone who's been affected by cancer one way or another. And many of our employees have been, many of our family members have been. And it takes a huge toll on us, on our community. And we just felt that there's an opportunity for us to support that cause. That affects really every age. It's just, unfortunately, a situation that can hit anybody at any time unexpectedly. So, again, it's just it's an opportunity for us to give back and to help people who are affected by this, and hopefully help them get back on their feet.
What are some of the other causes that the National Life Foundation supports?
We support many causes. Every year we get hundreds of grants through the foundation. We primarily focus on Vermont. We do have a campus in Dallas, Texas as well, and we give some money to nonprofits there. But from a cancer perspective, in addition to Branches of Hope, we also give money to other great organizations that support cancer survivors and cancer patients, including the Relay for Life, Light the Night Walk, Making Strides Against Breast Cancer, Camp Tecumseh. And in a few weeks, we'll actually be paddling very hard. We're hoping to take home the Champ Cup at the Dragon Boat Festival in Burlington.
Oh, yes. I know about the Dragon Boat Festival. My wife has participated in that. That's a great event.
It is, yep.
Well, let's turn to Teresa Lever, the patient navigator for the cancer program at the Central Vermont Medical Center. Teresa, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you, David.
So tell us a little bit about Branches of Hope that Beth just mentioned.
What is it? I'll be happy to tell you about that. And one of the things Beth neglected to say, though, is that National Life Foundation made a very large grant to Central Vermont Medical Center when it was building its radiation treatment facility, which is named the National Life Cancer Treatment Center. And so that partnership that began long ago when money was being raised for us to be able to offer radiation treatment here in Central Vermont, which is really a big deal, because for many, many years when people needed radiation treatment, they'd have to travel either to Burlington or down to Dartmouth-Hitchcock. And radiation treatment is a daily thing, sometimes for 6 weeks, so that was quite a burden for people. National Life really helped make that happen here, and that was the beginning of this cancer partnership. So we are just so delighted that they recognize what we came to recognize soon after we became a more comprehensive cancer program, which is that you really do need to address the needs, the emergency and basic needs that people find themselves needing to address once they're diagnosed with cancer.
And so tell us a little bit about Branches of Hope, what it does.
So, well, it's pretty simple. It's like many other funds that are available for people with cancer. This is a local fund. Money comes into it from the Do Good Fest and from, we laugh about this now, don't we, Beth, about bake sales. Bake sales can be quite profitable, but the Do Good Fest is a little more profitable. And donations here and there. Money comes into it. It's just an account that we keep here in the accounting department at Central Vermont Medical Center. And when I'm talking with people, or nurses are, or sometimes it's the home health agency, nurses or social workers from there are talking with people who are dealing with cancer, who are struggling financially, and there are many reasons that might be true. People make me aware of it, and we have a small committee that approves the applications for funding that I present to them, and it's really a very simple process. And then we request a check, and the checks actually are paying usually for a bill. It's very rare that we would actually give money out of the fund to an individual. Usually it's a bill that gets paid. And this is really how other funds in the state work as well. There's a statewide fund in Burlington through the Cancer Patient Support Foundation, and there are other local funds such as the Lamoille Area Cancer Network, which has a wonderful emergency fund.
So I understand that one of the beneficiaries of your programs, Amy, is joining us as well. Amy, are you there on the line?
Yes, I am.
So tell us a little bit about your cancer journey and how you came to be involved with Teresa Lever and to use their services.
Well, I was diagnosed with breast cancer in November, which is not in my family whatsoever, so this is right out of the blue for me. It was shocking. And I met up with a team through my, it's a cancer care team, I guess is how I want to put it. They learn each patient individually and their needs. I can't thank them enough for coming forward and saying, taking the time to get to know us individually and what we need. And Teresa had approached me and mentioned these funds if at any point in time that we needed assistance, let her know, in which we did. We actually needed assistance for firewood for our home, which normally we put up ourselves. And all I just told Teresa what our situation was, and she filled out the paperwork for us, and like she said, the check directly went to the supplier, and they delivered the firewood. It was amazing. I mean, the idea of letting me focus on my treatment and getting better, and her focusing, taking that stress away from me of worrying about how I was going to heat my home, was such a huge burden off my shoulders.
Now, I understand that your husband has also been diagnosed with cancer
and
is beginning his own treatment.
I was in the middle of my chemo when he was diagnosed in January with lung cancer. So, yes, we were both, he was in radiation while I was in chemo, and now we have switched. I went through radiation, and he's into chemo at this point in time.
So what kind of impact has this had on your lives, your work lives, and your family?
We have a young son at home. He's only 15, so it's been really hard for him. So that's been emotionally, I guess, hard. Financially, we both were self-employed. He no longer can run his business because of his treatment and his diagnosis. And with me, I'm a farmer. I'm seasonal, and my crop is, this year with the harsh winter that we had, I no longer have any berries at this point in time. So it is astronomical, and it is overwhelming.
So what does the road ahead look like for you? What are you figuring out that you can do to, you know, both support your family while continuing your treatment?
At this point in time, we've been lucky to plan. We had planned savings, so right now we're kind of working on that. And reaching out, like the Lamoille Area Cancer Network has been amazing here in Lamoille County, have helped us astronomically. I mean, the funding that they helped us with paid for the fuel to drive to Barrie every day, because I had 25 radiation treatments. So that's an hour away. That's a lot of burden fuel. Reaching out to your local areas like that has helped me. Going forward, I'm probably going to have to find a full-time job because of my business being gone and he can't work. You know, so that's where we're at this point to continue.
So what does the Lamoille Valley Cancer Support Program that you described, what is it and what do they do for you?
Locally, it's all the money stays in Lamoille County. So being that I'm in Lamoille County area, they have they reach out to you and say, they send you a check. Here's an amount to help you to pay for prescriptions your insurance didn't cover, whatever you need it for. And they approached me. Somebody suggested my name, and they just came to us and said, here, we want it. Here's a contribution to help you out and keep us updated on your treatment. And they help you throughout your treatment.
So this just came out of the blue. What was your reaction?
For somebody that's, both my husband and I are extremely independent, it was overwhelming, but extremely grateful, because we really didn't know how we were going to financially move forward and how we were going to be able to pay for the fuel to go to Barrie every day. And that was, it was amazing. I was very heartfelt. I just didn't, and I actually joined a team to give back while I was in my treatment. They do the cancer walk every year, and I made sure that we were involved in that to help give back.
Are you in any support groups? What other things help you at this time?
At this time, it's really been my cancer team. When I call up and say to my doctor, this is what's going on, they talk to us. They have offered us counseling right there, which is huge. And Barrie is just such an amazing facility because they do work as a team. You know, like Dr. Fran talks with Dr. Valentine, and you don't have to repeat yourself as a patient. They communicate as a team. And that has been amazing.
So, Teresa Lever at Central Vermont Medical Center, tell us a little bit about the whole range of services from prevention to the kind of support that Amy is getting that are available when somebody learns that they have cancer.
Sure. Well, let me start with Amy's story. I want to ask Amy something, and wondering whether she took advantage, Amy, of the acupuncture or the massage or Reiki.
Actually, I did all three.
Okay. So David, that's one of the forms of support that's offered here. And, you know, not everybody, a support group is not for everybody, though there is a support group in the community, and there's also one in Amy's community as well. But that's not for everyone. We offer what's called complementary care, complementary services here. And here it's those three, acupuncture, massage, and Reiki therapy, two of which are provided by volunteers, which is wonderful. And these services are free to our patients. So they really help reduce stress for people. And the practitioners are also amazing people. They're not professional counselors, but they certainly do a lot of counseling in their work, and just the TLC they give people is just a morale booster. So that's one of the forms of services, of support services that we have. We also have a free nutrition services here
for anybody in the cancer program. And I should mention that some of our services here in our cancer program at CVMC are available to people who are not necessarily getting their care here. There are people in Central Vermont who, for a variety of reasons, might be getting their care at UVM or at Dartmouth-Hitchcock, but if they live in Central Vermont, we are happy to serve them. And my services is Patient Navigator, where I help people with all kinds of things, not just getting them money to pay bills, but also linking them to other forms of support, making sure that their insurance coverage is adequate, and that their transportation needs are met, and anything that might get in the way of their getting what they need when they need it. That's what a patient navigator does in cancer care. Our primary job is to make sure that there are not delays, there are not obstacles, and that people, you know, from the point of getting their screening, which then leads ultimately to a diagnosis perhaps, that they get their screening, that they get the follow-up tests, that they're diagnosed, that they go on to whatever the next step is, and that things don't get in the way. Cancer care can be a maze, and that's why the patient navigator position was created in cancer care.
Now, you've mentioned that Branches of Hope provides sort of small-scale grants for very specific things. But, and I think it's on the order of, you mentioned around $500 that might go to, you know, pay firewood. So what about if people need more financial help than that?
So this is what happens. Let me back up a little and just talk about the situations that people find themselves in. So there are people who are doing pretty well financially, working all right, and somebody gets diagnosed with cancer, which has already been pointed out that this most of the time is out of the blue. People are really surprised about this. Nobody's expecting it. And it can be any one of us that this happens to. And so you get diagnosed with cancer, and all of a sudden you're not able to work the hours that you were working because you're having a lot of medical appointments, or because you're not feeling well, or because you're in treatment and the treatment kind of has you down, which is different than other illnesses, where once you start your treatment for other illnesses, you're usually feeling better. A lot of times once you start your cancer treatment, you're feeling pretty bad, and hopefully it's just temporary. So your income is down, your expenses might be up, and sometimes people can't work at all. Now, Amy just described a situation where she and her husband really, they haven't been bringing in any income. That's devastating, if you can imagine that. You go from having a moderate or decent income to having no income at all. And Amy said that they had some savings, so they're able to draw on the savings. Obviously, $500 is not going to cure that problem. So we social workers, there are many of us in the state of Vermont working in oncology programs, we sit down with people and try to figure out, okay, which bills can we help with? Are there other funds that we can use to tap? But sometimes it's a matter of people really needing to make great big changes. And that's one of the other burdens of a cancer diagnosis at times, that if you go from a $50,000 income to nothing, or $50,000 income to disability, which might be only $1,400 a month, you need to make big changes. Sometimes you might need to change your living situation, or, you know, we help people get some financial counseling to figure out how to consolidate their debt. But we work individually with people. I say we, meaning the oncology social workers and patient navigators in the state. But sometimes that $500 or $300 or $100 from Branches of Hope or the other local or regional funds, sometimes that really makes a difference. I met with a woman yesterday who was diagnosed recently with a second cancer, and they have two bills that they're overdue for. Just two bills. They're caught up on everything else. But what stress they have. And one of them resulted in a disconnect, an electric disconnect notice. So being able to take care of those two bills made a huge difference to that person. She can sleep at night.
Now, Teresa Lever, I understand there's, for people who are in the hospital, Central Vermont Medical Center has just received a grant to purchase Vermont art. Tell us a little bit about
that. Well, you know what? I don't know so much about that. I mean, I should, because the gallery reception is today. I think you have more information than I do, David, but I will say that it's a foundation, a Vermont foundation.
Yes, it's the Susan Sebastian Foundation. It's a Waterbury woman has started this foundation named after her daughter, who died of cancer but loved art. And she has purchased art for 38 rooms at Central Vermont, but is purchasing art for every hospital in Vermont, art that is by Vermont artists and photographers. With, I guess, the idea of giving people a view of, you know, the outside to reassure them that they will once again return to life outside.
Yes, I do have the quote from Susan to her mother. It says, speaking to her mother during one of her many hospital stays, and she said, "There are pictures in the hospitals, but none in the patients' rooms." And as we all know, if we've spent any time either visiting or as a patient in the hospital, the rooms are... well, they're not that attractive, and they certainly, when you're laying in your hospital bed staring at a green wall, doesn't necessarily make you feel very optimistic or hopeful. So I have seen some of these because our the person who runs our gallery, who is an employee here, has been collecting these, and they are gorgeous, just gorgeous paintings, and this will be a wonderful addition.
And I understand the opening is tonight at 4:30 in the lobby at Central Vermont Hospital.
It is, and everybody is welcome.
So, Teresa, I have to put you on the spot because I've learned something about you. One of the ways that you've dealt with your own cancer experience is that you make music.
I'll tell you a little bit about that, but I happen to be someone who knew nothing about cancer until I took this position when the radiation oncology department opened here and we became a comprehensive program. I was a social worker in a nursing home for 28 years for Central Vermont Medical Center, and our family is not... had not had a lot of experience with cancer, though I will say that my dad died of prostate cancer a year and a half ago at age 91, so he was one of the lucky ones. But here, as part of my job as a community outreach person, as well as the navigator here for patients and families, I gathered people together for an event a couple of years ago. I love to sing, and I thought that we could get some cancer survivors to sing at this event. They came together, they had a great time, and decided they wanted to stay together. So we've been meeting monthly, and our group's name is Alive! Exclamation point with song. And it's open to anybody in Central Vermont or anywhere else who likes to sing or make music. We're not professionals by any means, but we love getting together. We usually get together over a potluck. Everybody checks in, how are they doing, and then we just start singing.
Well, that sounds like a great way for everybody to kind of turn their spirits to other things. Amy, let me turn back to you as you're dealing with cancer, both you and your husband. What do you find helps you keep your spirits up to be on this journey?
Really, it's the team, my cancer team, and my son. I have two of them, my two boys keep me going. I look forward to them, and I get up every morning, and I always look at things as there's somebody out there that has it worse than I do. I really feel that way. Yes, it's hardship, but I'm one of the lucky ones going into not knowing what cancer was in my treatment. I wasn't as sick as most. It wasn't as hard on me as I think it has been on other people. I mean, it wasn't easy, but it wasn't the way it was described to me is not what I endured. So going forward, I always look at that I'm okay, and there's somebody worse off than I am.
Okay. And Beth Rusnak, president of the National Life Foundation, what's in store ahead? Is the Do Good Festival have another act in it for next year?
Yes, we are definitely looking at bringing it back for 2016. We're really excited to. I just want to mention, I want to give a plug for Alive with Song, because I was fortunate enough to get to introduce them on the stage, and they sing beautifully. They're fantastic.
Okay.
Thank you, Beth.
Well, on that note, I think we'll wrap it up here. I want to thank the three of you, Teresa Lever, patient navigator for the cancer program at UVM Health Network, Central Vermont Medical Center, Beth Ruznock, the president of National Life Foundation, and Amy, a patient at Central Vermont Medical Center. Thanks to all three of you for talking about your cancer experience or cancer work.
Thank you, David.
And that does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. We'll be back next Wednesday at 1 with another conversation, and all Vermont conversations can be heard at VermontConversation.com. Thanks for listening.
You have been listening to Vermont Conversations with David Goodman, made possible by Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility and its 750-plus members. Additional support is provided by National Life Insurance, for over 150 years working for a better tomorrow. By Fairpoint Communications, small businesses make it big with Fairpoint. By the Alchemist Brewery, serving Greater Waterbury and Vermont since 2003. And Let's Grow Kids, focusing on the first years of child development. By the University of Vermont Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. And Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers to provide clean, reliable, and cost-effective power. Join us again next Wednesday at 1 o'clock for David Goodman's Vermont Conversations.
On locally owned and operated, 96.1 WDEV, FM in Warren, FM 96.5 in Barrie, and AM 550 WDEV, Waterbury, Montpelier.
I'm Tim McGuire. The FBI says 24-year-old Muhammad Yusuf Abdulaziz acted on his own when he attacked two military sites in Chattanooga, killing five service members. Special Agent in Charge Ed Reinhold tells reporters...